All right, so imagine this. You're walking down the street after a client meeting, maybe grabbing a coffee, and suddenly you're stopped and frisked by the police.
Oh, wow,
It's a pretty unsettling thought, right?
yeah, definitely.
Well, that's the kind of scenario we're dealing with in Cybron v. New York.
Okay.
This 1968 Supreme Court case really digs into the Fourth Amendment and how it plays out in like our everyday encounters with law enforcement.
Interesting.
And you know what? This case is still super relevant today, especially when we're talking about things like stop and frisk policies.
I can see that.
It's like a legal foundation for a lot of those discussions.
Absolutely. What's so compelling about Cybron is that it really highlights this delicate balance between, the power of the police and the rights of individuals. It's a case that every lawyer really should understand.
Yeah, especially those working in criminal law.
Oh, for sure.
And to make things even more interesting, Cybron was decided alongside another landmark case, Terry v. Ohio.
Right.
They both deal with stop and frisk, but they have different outcomes.
Yeah, exactly. Seeing these two cases together really helps us grasp the nuances of the Fourth Amendment.
Totally agree. Okay, so let's set the stage for Cybron. We're in New York City in the 1960s. Our main character, Cybron, is being watched by a police officer.
Okay.
The officer sees him talking to a bunch of known drug addicts over like an 8-hour period. But here's the thing. The officer never actually sees Cybron buy or sell drugs.
So the officer is acting on a hunch.
Pretty much, yeah.
Just a suspicion based on who Cybron is talking to.
Exactly. Not on any solid evidence of a crime happening.
That's where things start to get interesting legally.
Right. So then the officer sees Cybron walk into a restaurant,
Okay.
follows him inside, and says, "You know what I'm after." He then makes Cybron go outside with him.
Oh, wow.
Once they're outside, the officer reaches straight into Cybron's pocket and finds heroin.
And that brings up the Fourth Amendment, right? Protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. So, did the officer even have a good reason to stop Sebron in the first place? And did he have the right to search him like that?
Those are the big questions the Supreme Court had to grapple with. This is something that always trips me up. How can the court rule differently in two cases decided on the same day? What was the key difference in Sebron?
Well, you see, the court actually issued rulings on two cases that day, Sebron v. New York and Peters v. New York.
Oh, okay.
Both deal with searches and seizures, but the outcomes were different.
I see.
And it's this difference that helps us understand the legal principles involved. Let's focus on Sebron first.
Sounds good.
One of the main things the court looked at was whether the police could search someone just because of who they were hanging out with.
So, like, guilt by association?
Kinda, yeah. But in Sebron's case, they said no.
Oh, interesting. So just being around people who might be involved in something illegal doesn't automatically give the police the right to search you.
Exactly. The court found that the officer didn't have probable cause to think that Sebron was actually committing a crime, and they also decided that the officer didn't have a good reason to believe Sebron was armed and dangerous.
Which is a big requirement for a legal stop and frisk.
Right.
But hold on. Didn't the court uphold New York's stop and frisk law? I'm a little confused about that part.
Good point. You're right, they didn't throw out the whole law. The court's ruling was that the law was unconstitutional as applied to Cybron's case.
As applied. What does that mean exactly?
It means that the way the law was used in this particular situation violated Cybron's Fourth Amendment rights. As applied basically means that the court found the law itself wasn't necessarily bad, just how it was used in this case.
Okay, that makes more sense. So, how did Peters v. New York differ?
In Peters, the police actually had what we call probable cause based on what they saw.
Oh.
An officer saw Peters acting kind of shady in the hallway of an apartment building, like tiptoeing around and then suddenly running away.
Ah, I see. So, unlike in Cybron's case, the behavior in Peters was more concrete.
Precisely. It went beyond just a hunch or an association with, people involved in criminal activity.
Right. Peters v. New York really shows the difference between reasonable suspicion and probable cause.
Exactly. Reasonable suspicion is what you need for a short investigative stop.
Okay.
But probable cause is a higher standard. That's what you need for an arrest. Reasonable suspicion allows an officer to briefly stop someone to investigate if they think a crime is happening.
Got it. So, two cases, both about searches, but with opposite outcomes, because of the little details and how the law was used.
Exactly. And to add to that, the concurring and dissenting opinions from the justices give us even more insight into these complexities.
Oh, that's where things usually get really interesting. What can you tell us about those differing viewpoints?
Well, for instance, Justice Douglas agreed with the majority in Cybron, but he was really worried about the potential impact on marginalized groups.
Yeah, he was concerned that using association with, like, suspected criminals as a reason for searches could be unfair to certain communities. I see what you mean. Especially given all the talk about stop and frisk and whether it's applied fairly.
Exactly. Then you have Justice Harlan. He thought the majority didn't go far enough in dealing with the whole New York stop and frisk law.
Oh. What did he think they should have done?
He felt they should have given clearer guidelines on using the law in a way that protects constitutional rights.
So he wanted to prevent potential abuse of the law.
Exactly. And to make things even more interesting, we also have a partial dissent from Justice Black.
Dissenting opinions always add another layer, don't they? What was his view?
Well, he argued that reaching into a pocket could be seen as like a sign of danger. So he thought the officer in Cybron was justified.
So even on the Supreme Court, you can have different interpretations of the same facts.
Precisely. It shows how legal interpretation isn't always black and white. Now, thinking about the big picture, what's interesting about Cybron is that the court really rejected hunches as a good enough reason for searches.
So they raised the bar for police conduct.
Right. They said officers have to be able to point to specific facts, the kind of facts that would make any reasonable person think a crime's happening or that someone's armed and dangerous.
They didn't just want a gut feeling, right? They wanted hard evidence.
You got it. And they used some pretty strong wording in their opinion to drive this point home.
I always love hearing those powerful quotes from the court. What did they say exactly?
They said, and I quote, "The officer must be able to point to specific and articulable facts, which, taken together with rational inferences from those facts, reasonably warrant that intrusion."
No more vague suspicions. You need a solid factual basis to justify a stop and frisk.
That's where Cybron's lasting impact comes in. It still shapes how the police operate today and helps lawyers like us understand the limits of the Fourth Amendment.
So how does Cybron actually play out in the real world? What are the practical takeaways for lawyers like our listeners?
Well, first, it emphasizes the importance of good documentation. Police need to be able to explain exactly what facts led them to believe a stop and frisk was necessary.
No more generalizations or assumptions.
Exactly. It's crucial to have a clear record for legal proceedings. And it's not just about documentation. Cybron also shows how important it is to train law enforcement properly.
Ooh, how so?
Well, they need to understand the difference between someone just being associated with a criminal and actual suspicious behavior.
You can't judge someone just because of who they're talking to.
Right. It's about looking at the context and individual actions.
That makes sense.
And finally, Cybron reinforces the different levels of justification needed for a stop versus an arrest. We talked about how a stop requires reasonable suspicion, but an arrest requires probable cause.
Which is a much higher standard of proof.
Exactly. And this distinction is really important for protecting people from illegal arrests and ensuring law enforcement acts appropriately. Think about it in terms of your work. If you're arguing a motion to suppress evidence, understanding this difference from Cybron is key.
It's a fundamental distinction for ensuring rights are protected.
Absolutely. Cybron, along with Terry v. Ohio, really laid the groundwork for how we decide whether stop and frisk procedures are legal.
It's like a cornerstone of Fourth Amendment law.
Precisely.
Okay, we've covered a lot today. What would you say is the most important thing for our listeners to take away? What should they be thinking about after we're done?
I think the biggest takeaway is that context is everything in legal analysis. We talked about how Cybron and Peters were decided on the same day using the same law, but they had different outcomes.
Because the specific details of each case were so important.
Exactly. And that shows how law isn't just about abstract ideas. It's about applying those ideas to real-world situations, to the messy details of individual cases.
It's what makes legal analysis both challenging and fascinating, right? All those nuances.
Absolutely.
You know what? This brings up a question for our listeners. How do you think Cybron might be decided differently today?
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, think about it. We're surrounded by technology now. Facial recognition, predictive policing algorithms, all sorts of tools law enforcement can use. Does all that complicate these Fourth Amendment issues we've been talking about?
You're right. That's a question legal experts are grappling with right now. Does technology change what reasonable suspicion means? Does it give the police too much power? These are important questions we need to address as technology and law enforcement continue to intersect. Imagine how Cybron might play out if the police had used facial recognition and saw that he had recently visited a known drug location. Would that be enough for reasonable suspicion?
It's tricky, right?
And it shows how Cybron is still relevant even in our tech-driven world today.
It makes you think about privacy and the balance of power in this digital age. Cases like Cybron give us a framework for thinking about these fundamental issues.
For sure. The legal fights we see today are often rooted in landmark decisions from the past. Understanding cases like Cybron even decades later is so valuable for understanding how our legal system is evolving.
And it's amazing how a case from 1968 can still be so relevant and spark such important discussions.
It tells you a lot about how fundamental rights are always being tested and reinterpreted as society changes.
That's a great point. We could probably talk about Cybron all day, but I think we've given our listeners plenty to think about.
Definitely. We've explored a lot, from the intricacies of the Fourth Amendment to the significance of Cybron and its lasting impact.
It's been a really eye-opening deep dive. Thanks for joining me on this exploration of the law.
It's been my pleasure. Always happy to delve into these fascinating legal precedents.
And to our listeners, stay sharp. Until next time, remember, context is key. And the details matter.
And don't forget the lessons from Cybron v. New York. It's a case that continues to shape our understanding of individual rights when it comes to police power.
Yeah, it really does.
It does. It speaks volumes about how important these fundamental rights are and how they're always being tested, you know, reinterpreted as things change.
Absolutely. It feels like we could talk about Cybron for hours, but I think we've given everyone a lot to think about.
Yeah, we have. We've covered a lot of ground today, like all those complexities of the Fourth Amendment, the importance of Cybron, and you know what it means for us even today.
It's been a really great deep dive. Thanks for joining me and walking through all the ins and outs of this case.
My pleasure, truly. It's always fun to dig into these fascinating legal cases, you know?
And to everyone listening, stay sharp out there. Until next time, remember, context matters. The details, they can make all the difference.
And don't forget the lessons from Cybron v. New York. It's a case that's still shaping how we understand individual rights when it comes to the power of law enforcement.